welcome to Cinemarathon, the movie marathons podcast where we watch movie marathons all in one day and then talk about them later. For this month, we decided upon the Kevin Smith, Jay and Silent Bob movies. Which consists of Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and Clerks 2. Joining me is a slew of individuals. First, immediately to my left, we have Richard.
Hello, this is Richard.
Yeah, so you may remember from the James Bond podcast.
That's right.
Next to him is Matthew.
Hello. I've been on a few of the other podcasts, like Mad Max and Scream. Or actually, I wasn't on Scream. I was there for the marathon.
You're just taking credit for taking stuff credit. You didn't even do.
Exactly.
And then joining us for the first time is our friend Alexei.
Hello, hello. Glad to be here. Thank you very much.
Yes, welcome, welcome. And finally, my brother Dan.
What's up?
How's it going, guys?
Good.
Everybody feeling limber after that long, long marathon?
It wasn't the worst.
Last one kind of took it out of me a little bit.
Yeah, no, Clerks 2 was not your favorite one, was it?
No, I had always vowed never to watch it. It was like a promise I made to myself, but I broke that for the marathon, so...
Really? What made you go back on your promise?
Well, I'm actually kind of... I think it's funny that you guys actually did go see it, because you guys were way bigger View Askew fans than me. Like, Dan was so into it growing up, and I always liked him, but it was never, like, my obsession or anything. But even just the thought of Clerks 2 upset me, so I was like, I'll never, ever do
this. What about it specifically bothered you? Like, just the concept of it?
I don't know. I guess just the idea of, like, Clerks being such an icon of, like, indie cinema and then reapproaching it from this, like, very, like, standard Hollywood viewpoint just
right.
Just didn't ever felt right to me.
Yeah, I mean, we are getting a little ahead of ourselves, but
that was really well spoken.
Thank you.
Right, the podcast on. Is over.
We don't even have to talk about that.
Yeah.
You just but said
it's,
it all.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning that we did grow up, like, I mean, certainly I remember, I think the first time I saw Clerks, I was, like, working at a video store and rented it and just loved it. And, you know, ever since then, I've been a huge Kevin Smith fan growing up. I mean, were all of us, like, big Kevin Smith fans?
Near religious devotion to the first three movies.
Mallrats was my first experience, I think. Like, and then as I grew also to work in a video store, that's when I started checking out the other films.
Yeah.
Wait, did anybody here not work at a video store? Alexei, did
I
you
didn't,
work at
I never worked at
everybody
a video
else,
store.
Everybody else.
We all worked. Because Matthew and I worked in Hollywood Video together in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was at Blockbuster. Did you ever do any customer service or anything, Alexei?
I worked at a Staples in high school.
Ooh.
We didn't have Blockbuster. We just had Video World and Captain Video, and I never worked at either of them.
Well, speaking of video rentals and stuff, that sort of brings us into the first movie, Clerks. Chewbacca! As you mentioned, even if you didn't work in a video store, I think most people have done some sort of customer service job at some point. And honestly, I think that's, I mean, there's strengths in the movie beyond just that, but I think that's one of, at least to me, when I first saw it, was one of the most appealing things.
I like the dick and fart jokes.
Yeah, but just seeing, like, Randall, like, rip into customers and stuff, like, especially having worked at a video store, like, I just loved every second of that.
Yeah, I mean, his perspective is something I think anyone that's ever worked in retail, like, totally can relate to.
Yeah, like, all the stupid questions that...
Yeah,
they have like a whole segment of dumb questions and stuff.
Yeah, I mean even though Randall's perspective is totally harsh and like clearly not justified, like I don't know, it's just sort of like a catharsis like for anybody that's ever done a retail job, you know.
And like Clerks is what I can remember the first movie I ever saw where, I mean, it sounds kind of cliche to even say this, but that where the characters in the movie talk like more like the, you know, your everyday, or at least
right.
my everyday experience than any other movies I saw.
Yeah, well, like there was this whole movement in cinema to like, it's what is it, like Tarantino and Kevin Smith that like, oh, people will talk like real people and talk about Star Wars and shit and like
yes.
have real conversations.
But they don't talk like real people. They just talk about things that real
right.
people are interested
well, it's
in.
It's more like stuff that is not the subject of the movie.
They have conversations like I would have conversations with my friends, you know.
Right.
What about all those people on the Death Star that got blown up that had nothing to do with it? You know, stuff like that. It's just like, I had conversations like that about stupid things about movies that they would never even expect you to think about.
Yeah.
But you have these huge, overly complex conversations about them.
Yeah, I feel like it's not necessarily that they're written as, like, real people talk, but it's just, it's dialogue that's not based on a need to move a plot forward.
Right.
Which is like, no, in your everyday life, you're not speaking in order to make a narrative structure make sense.
Yeah.
It was just, these ideas that come into people's heads, although it still feels rather theatrical.
Right. But also the subject matter, like the Star Wars conversations, like stuff like that. It was in tune with in my own experience of like what I would be talking about with people.
Right. Although you would have those like bullshit conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. The sex stuff, like when the first, when Clerks came out, or when I saw it, I guess it was a couple years after it had come out. So I guess I was like 13, I think, when I first saw Clerks. So the sex stuff aspect of it wasn't like something that, oh, this is how me and my friends talk. It was more like I've never heard stuff like that
before. Yeah, it's pretty raunchy. Even I'd say even by like today's standards. I mean, especially shit like, what is it, Randall shows Walt Flanagan that, yeah, like a, yeah, fucking full spread like snatch like picture.
He says that's, you can see her kidney.
Yeah.
The snowballing is like the big
thing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, being like when I, because that's early in the movie, and I distinctly remember watching that and just being like, okay, like that opened a door. To
right.
Me
it's
that
like
I've
you,
never...
you had never imagined that as even like an act.
Yeah.
Happening.
Exactly. Yeah.
Would you say Clerks, Dan, is the birth of your love of the dick joke?
Oh man, I'm trying to think. Would I have loved dick jokes before Clerks?
I don't know. Well, it's interesting. Us being young men, I could see this kind of talk and this sort of movie kind of shaping. I mean, I don't think we are those guys in that movie and we talk like that all the time.
Right.
But certainly in terms of like cursing in daily conversation, I know, especially like Jay. Like,
or it's like, what is this, chicken and the egg? It's like, do we like those movies because we curse, or do we curse because we like those
right.
movies?
It's like, was Jay so funny that like now I say what the shit and like curse all the time?
I remember when I was watching Clerks not thinking that that like Jay was so funny to me as like a character. Like, I remember he was funny, but he's not really to me the driving force of what is funny about Clerks.
Right. I guess I'm more
that's
talking
like
about
later.
The later movies.
Yeah,
yeah, you're right, because we should talk about like
he's more
Jay.
Like scary.
Yeah, I feel like in this movie he is, it's like cinema verite. Like that's like that guy for real.
He's a force of nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, at that point, Muse, he was just some guy. You know, it was, like, completely unfiltered, I assume.
He was always just some guy.
Well, yeah. I mean, he definitely becomes more self-aware as the movies go on.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think his character purpose, him and Silent Bob, it seems like their character purpose in the first movie especially, were to be kind of, like, the personification of what Dante is going through. Because if you watch, like, when Dante's in a conversation or doing something, he cuts to them outside. And if Dante's excited about something, you know, Jay's dancing around.
Right, right.
I mean, they were more symbolic characters than anything. And even in the end, when Silent Bob gives him the final advice, is almost like what his conscience is telling him.
Well, it's almost like every aspect of the film is just an extension of Dante, or I guess Kevin Smith. Like, they're all just version. Like, Dante and Randall,
right.
Their dialogue is just the inner. It's
well,
Kevin
it's,
Smith having
yeah.
a conversation with himself.
And their whole dynamic is sort of like, if you're a clerk at a store, it's like, Randall is who you want to be, or you fantasize yourself as being to customers. And then Dante's like,
you really are
yeah. like eating yeah. shit and going like, oh, I guess I'll go in, oh, whatever. Like
getting yeah. cigarettes thrown
yeah.
at you.
Yeah. It's like the Jekyll and Hyde, like,
yeah.
like thing.
But. Yeah. It's interesting watching that first movie. Cause like, it feels all very authentic because in his later movies, like he's a famous guy. He makes these kind of crazy movies, but you really feel like he's that guy.
It doesn't hurt to
life.
Shoot in the actual convenience
yeah.
store and video store that he worked in.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like interesting to me too to see like what independent movies are today, like as compared to something like this, because an audience would have no fucking patience for this movie, I feel like, if it came out today. You know what I mean? Like
right.
in these like what 20, 25 vignette chapters of people just talking about nothing. You know
well,
what I mean? Like,
it's way easier to make a movie now just from a technical perspective that you would, the like line flubs and the, you know, the that kind of aspect. Technically, maybe
right.
you have a point
there.
You're
not paying for film.
Well, there, it's
exactly,
interesting
yeah.
you bring
and
that up. Yeah, there are a lot
stuff, yeah.
of like, in terms of the acting.
Of awful line,
and the line. Yeah, like, it's pretty, pretty bad. But it's amazing how I think one of the it's like a weird charm to the movie almost, like it sort of transcends its like shittiness, because yeah, like you're saying, like now yeah, if you're shooting digitally, you just do another take and be fine, but he's like burning through film, he's paying by the thousands like per feed,
and he likes those long takes where he gets an entire conversation
yeah.
without a cut.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite of Avatar. Like whatever Avatar is, Clerks is the opposite of
so it. An unfunny sci-fi FX blunder versus a very funny tiny little indie. Yeah,
yeah.
Pretty much exact opposites.
Yeah.
It's the power of like what, like of how limitations can help a project. You know, like when people have too much control and too much time and too Clerks much do. Money.
Yeah, that's the story of everything.
Well, it doesn't. I don't think it begins at Clerks 2. I think. I mean, like Matthew, it's interesting. While we were watching, you mentioned as we were getting to later movies, you're like, "Oh, I miss the style of Clerks, the sort of simplicity of it." But I find it really interesting that Dan, I think you mentioned while we were watching, it seems less of like a creative decision,
right? Well, what I was saying,
it's like it just happened that
what
way.
What I was saying while we're watching is that I don't think that Kevin Smith, while he was set out to make a minimalist movie of like, I want to have a master shot where it just it's this scene is an 8-minute master and then it goes to another thing. I don't think he like sort of set out that to make that as an artistic statement. I think when you start out making movies with your friends, that's just how you make them. You just make them with an 8-minute master. That's how the first movies I ever made were like that.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was aware of it to some extent. I mean, I'm not Slacker. Saying it's like... Yeah, well, that actually... He does specifically say, like, that's
and that
the movie
did come
that
out before this.
Movie.
And that movie is very avant-garde. I mean, on purpose.
Right, but the reason why I was saying that was... It was because we were watching Clerks 2. And my point was, like, he didn't sort of think to, like, continue that visual style... Because to him, it wasn't as important because it's
well, he
like,
changed, times have changed.
Right. Because he never like put that much stock into putting it all in a master anyway. I think he probably would consider that, oh, that's before I like became a better filmmaker.
I mean, it was already lost by the time we got to Mallrats. And that was only a couple years later.
Well, there's still like there's even in Mallrats and Chasing Amy. In Mallrats, there are scenes where it's just like a two-shot. Like her trying on the panties and going all the way.
That's true.
That's, that scene with Joy Lauren Adams, that's all just one take.
Yeah.
There's
standing
no, like,
at the counter. There are a lot
no
of those.
Cuts in that scene.
Yeah.
In Mallrats, you know, he has a larger budget. It was a studio project. You know, they approached him to write the film, you know, make a comedy, you know, our target audience and go with it. And so I think with a larger budget, he could probably do things a little bit more than he could have done with Clerks, which we were talking about how just the situation. So it's like, okay, well, we didn't get it on this take, so we don't get it.
Before we get to Mallrats, which we will very shortly, there's like a couple more things in Clerks that I want to go over. One, when we were even laughing when it happened, I think one of the more infamous scenes in Clerks is the idea that his ex-girlfriend, Caitlin Bree, goes into the bathroom and like fucks a dead guy
in the dark.
I remember it being really funny when I watched it, but now that we're older... I just think like the logistics of like how like she goes and fucks a guy in the dark and like it's so bizarre.
How would you not know it was him?
Yeah, like how does that happen?
Yeah, I think that's kind of like the charm of the movie though, is that like none of the characters are like the situations are so out of this world. Like the guy that sits in the aisle with eggs and he like does a
tries to do
a disappearing act with his handkerchief. Like none of that is based in any sort of understandable reality for like as we sit here and talk about a movie, but in that universe that he creates, that feels real. And that's what kind of makes it funny. It's like she comes out of the bathroom like, oh, yeah, he just rocked my world. And she's like on cloud nine. And you're like, okay, clearly that guy was about 80 pounds heavier than your actual boyfriend. You know, it's like the logic doesn't go into
it. Well, and also Caitlin Bree was just a big slut. So
how do you know when to finish when you're fucking a dead guy?
Yeah, does a dead man come or something?
I don't know. I mean...
Well, and I would think that the body would be kind of cold.
Stiff.
I mean,
that's what she liked about it, though. Yeah.
And we know he was still hard afterwards.
It's interesting, Matthew, that you mentioned that like it feels realistic, because I feel like the main characters feel incredibly real. But it's interesting, like the clientele of the stores, they're the ones that made it seem like complete like caricatures. Like you mentioned the egg guy. They're all, they're completely zany. But I think it's almost justified in a weird way, because it's like how they perceive those people mentally, I guess.
Oh, definitely.
Like,
I mean, working in retail, like at the video store, there were some crazy motherfuckers that came in and did some really weird shit that I would never, if you put that in a movie, I'd be like, no fucking way that ever happened. But it did. It's weird shit. Yeah. People are strange. You know?
Before we move on to Mallrats, there's one last thing I want to talk about. In Clerks, I feel like it'd be a crime if we didn't bring up the fact that the guy that plays Randall, what's his name? I forgot.
Jeff Anderson? Is that?
Yeah. Jeff Anderson, I think does like an amazing job in Clerks. Like I think he steals the entire movie and is pretty great in it. Like,
I don't think anybody disagrees. I mean, for the most part, it's really his movie.
Yeah, it's interesting how, and this kind of goes into Mallrats. Suzanne, you're all that I wanted of a girl. It's interesting that this sort of side funny characters almost end up being way more likable than the, I guess, main characters.
Well, they don't. He doesn't need to advance the plot at all. They give the plot to Dante, and then Randall just gets the zingers, you know, right. Zinger after zinger.
But unlike Dante, who I there are parts that I like about Dante. Like, I can almost see myself in a lot of him.
That guy is just charming, but despite himself.
The guy in Mallrats, our hero.
Jeremy
London or T.S.? Whatever. T.S. Yeah, T.S. He's fucking terrible. Like,
the worst.
So would you consider him to be the main character? Would you consider this to be a buddy, Mallrats to be a buddy film?
No, well, I think that honestly it feels like somebody re-edited it to make him not the main character because he was so bad.
Well, it feels like it should be Brody's movie. Yeah. I mean, it feels like Brody's movie.
No,
like,
I think it's probably supposed to be more of like a Clerks thing where it's like a shared billing. Like, you know, because I wouldn't say that, like, Clerks is this movie about this guy named Randall. Like, I wouldn't
right.
say that.
It's
be like,
about both of them.
And I wouldn't say that Clerks is a movie about this guy named Doc. I'd just be like, Clerks about these two dudes. So I think Mallrats is supposed to be the same thing. Like, oh, it's about these two guys. But it's really just like, oh, it's this movie about Jason Lee. Because nobody would say it's about those two
right,
guys.
Like, they're almost going for that dynamic where T.S. is supposed to kind of be Dante-esque. He's, like, got girlfriend problems.
If you compare the structure of the movie and who the first character on screen is, you have a movie about Dante and you have a movie about T.S. and Claire Forlani, whatever her name is, and it feels like they kind of cut her out of the movie.
For me, honestly, like, it was another situation where I hadn't seen the movie in, like, forever. Like, it's probably also close to 10 years. But I had no recollection of the character of T.S.
Well,
when you were talking about Jeremy London,
so.
Like, I was like, who were you talking about? What
well,
character?
If you want any answer, just look at the poster. I mean,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
Jason Lee in the Star Wars pose, right?
He's like a Shandor.
T.S. is like
totally.
in a Starburst cutout in the corner over by the security guard, right?
Right, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't
totally.
He like kind of barely on it?
I guess he was more of a main character in the original version, which I know, Matthew, I don't think you've ever seen it, but we were sort of talking about it during the movie. That there was like 20 minutes of content from Mallrats.
20 awful,
axed
awful
out of the movie, and it's
minutes.
It's all T.S. and Claire Forlani, like their whole thing.
I don't really remember the content so much. I just remember them on the bonus features, just like railing against it, just like talking
right.
mad shit about it. So I mean, with that sell, it was hard like not to come away with it with the same.
Right, like they didn't present it. Dan is holding the Mallrats DVD.
Stan Lee is in the Starburst. I read it wrong.
Which basically has Jason Lee like front and center.
Yeah, like T.S. and Claire Forlani is like they're as defined as like Ethan Suplee or the security guard. They're kind of like these fringe extra characters,
yeah.
And then he's like front and center as like the main guy.
Yeah.
Well, he's the most Kevin Smith of the characters, Brody is, so that makes a little bit of sense. And also, Mallrats is kind of like the dating show in Mallrats. He steps in and steals the entire
yeah.
thing.
That dating show is so fucking funny. Like, that's one of the things, going into Mallrats, I had a memory of it of being like, yeah, when I was a kid, I thought it was hilarious, but now I bet it sucks. And, like, there are aspects of it that are completely, bet like, terrible. But that dating show is so funny.
What's
Gil
so terrible?
Hicks.
Yeah, it's all about yeah. What's Gil the most terrible Hicks. Part of Mallrats for people? Because I love the shit out of that movie, and I have a hard time picking out what's really bad.
Well,
it's just the gaggy, just the juvenile,
the Looney Tunes
gaggy,
element.
Yeah.
It's very cartoonish.
The slide whistles,
yeah, which
well,
I think
with all the blueprints, like Wile E. Coyote.
Dude, I love
yeah.
that stuff.
I think embracing that isn't bad. Like, I wouldn't say it's a negative on the movie, but there is a clear shift in tone. From like Clerks has elements that are kind of crazy, like what like Randall knocks over a body in a scene we don't see, and then they run out, and it's like it's definitely a heightened reality. I know a lot of people saw Mallrats first. Like, I don't know yeah. if that's the case for anybody.
I saw
here.
Clerks first.
No, I saw Mallrats first.
Yeah, but I saw Clerks first. So to me, Mallrats was like that was kind of definitely different than what I was used to.
And if what you like about Clerks is like 37 dicks and like snowballing and Scary Jay, then it's like I can see why you would not be as like liking Mallrats as much.
Mallrats has a farting during oral sex joke. It has a stink palm eating someone's shitty pretzel joke.
Yeah.
It's got some
yeah,
dick
but those
and fart.
Are like they're not like.
But they
don't have the same tone.
Do they
as,
ever
like,
say
the
cunt in the entirety of Mallrats?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Like, well, sorry, not to.
It's
sorry
definitely
to
universal.
Offend our listeners.
Oh please, fuck
but I think if we're going to talk about Kevin Smith movies, like that comes up. They like the shit coming out of Jay's mouth in Clerks. Like he says some pretty offensive.
Yeah.
Like I mean, it doesn't.
It's not Universal
me,
Pictures for sure. That
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
That is right.
I mean, they are.
It's
they
a
are
light,
toned
it's a,
down.
It's like a much lighter tone. I mean,
like in Clerks, Jay is a drug dealer. Like, yeah. And then I think from Mallrats on, he's just like a cartoon character.
That really. Deals drugs.
Yeah, like happens to deal drugs. I think I recall there was a time where Universal wanted to cast like somebody else as
Jay. It was either Seth Green or Brecken Meyer.
Yeah, we're like going to be
that. They were like two of the people that were like auditioning and that
they made Jay audition against them.
Approved them. And they were like, no, it should be... just be one of these guys because they thought it was a character that was a lot like Brecken Meyer's character in Clueless because I guess Clueless predated Mallrats.
Oh, yeah.
I think. So their idea was like, oh, well, Brecken Meyer was that like kind of pothead skater guy in Clueless and let's just have him do the same thing.
They should have replaced Jeremy London with Brecken Meyer.
Yeah, that would have been a little bit more believable.
Anybody.
The
other London.
Basically... Shit, put Daisy in Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer out of Baltimore. Fucking Jeremy London. Yeah, he was all... Like, we were laughing.
Was terrible.
There's a scene at the beginning of the movie, Matthew and I were cracking up, where he's talking to Jason Lee, like he just broke up with his girlfriend, and he's like, the acting is...
It's
insane.
Like overacting 101.
Yeah, like, it looks like an alien ship is like hit him with lights and he's being dragged up. Like he's just like bug-eyed, crazy looking.
Yeah, it's like high school play. Like what do I do to indicate like I'm upset right now?
I mean, to be fair, Clerks isn't without its like high school play moments.
But those
like,
people have excuses. They are not
and they're not in close-ups.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a big deal. It's like they're
in
wide.
Leads,
if you're wide, it's like then it is more like a play, and so you can kind of get away with that sort of stagey acting a little more.
Well, and Clerks didn't have as many reaction shots, right? I mean, it was it was mostly staying with the people who were talking and not cutting away. Where again, a larger
budget. I'm actually going to say that none of this matters because he's just awful.
Yeah,
like I think
he's
bad either
is,
way.
What he's saying is there's plenty of. Of people that are also awful, albeit in much smaller parts.
Yeah.
Than Clerks, but the reason why it doesn't bother you so much is because it's like usually not in close up, or you're not like cutting to them for reaction shots, of eye rolling, and really
or
bad.
A main character.
Well, isn't the shot that you're talking about, John, actually a wide two?
Oh,
shot?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what you're trying to say, Richard, is like if they had coverage, you could like edit around a bad performance.
Exactly.
But like if it's a wide, you're stuck with it.
Oh,
know?
We were
like,
stuck with it already.
Yeah.
Now, dude, punch in on the girl. Do something.
Cut to the cat pooping.
And Mallrats also has the warm welcoming to Kevin Smith land with Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Who joins in.
Fat Ben Affleck.
right. You kept joking like his teeth were fucked up. And
dude,
like,
that was the ugliest Ben Affleck.
The whole marathon was like his sort of. You know, progression into movie star.
Like Michelangelo was chiseling at him, and like
Affleck was the only one that got prettier. Like everybody else was just getting older and weirder looking, and Affleck was just like, just I guess surgery or what, something.
Cocaine helped him drop some of those pounds.
Money helps.
Yeah, money.
But I don't know how you guys feel because I know, I mean, certainly in our society, Ben Affleck, I mean, he's had sort of an uprising as like a director now.
He was the bomb in Phantom.
Right. But he's sort of notoriously kind of made fun of for being this guy in all these like shitty like make money movies. But I've always, even through it all, I've always had a soft spot for Ben Affleck. I've always loved him. And I think
it is.
From the highest high to the lowest low. Like, dude.
John sees himself in Affleck. It's true. He does. He sees his own life in Ben Affleck.
I suppose.
Similar
perhaps.
Metamorphosis has happened.
But I mean,
to John.
For as much, like, the choices he's made, he deserves every moment. Of shit he gets. Like, I'm not defending him in any way. But I think there is genuinely something to his performance. Like, a lot of people say that he's a shitty actor. He's a bad actor. I think the dude's, like, really funny. I really like him in a lot of his performances. Even the bad ones, there's, like, this weird kind of cockeyed
him and Matt
smile,
Damon
like,
are both
charm
charming.
To him.
I don't like him as a lead. I think he plays supporting characters very well.
This sort of moves. We can move now. I mean, is there anything else anybody wants to talk about? Mallrats? Are we missing anything?
Do you guys feel what? I'm not even saying this is like a negative comment or that I feel this way. Or I'm just sort of curious. But like, what is the difference between Randall and Brody? They feel kind of different, but like, what? What's different about those characters?
He's way more charming. All those times he mugs through the fourth wall, like we laugh because we were falling in love with him.
But that's like nuances brought by like the actor and the performance.
Sure,
like, on the page. So I'm sort of talking about like the inception of like the actual character, Jason Lee's performance of the character.
I think
is he different at all, or is it the same character?
Yeah, I think he definitely is in the sense that even though he's kind of a slacker and you know is portrayed as this sort of like no life, like comic book lover or whatever, he's definitely got motivations. Like he's got these, well, oh, he has desires.
I don't know about that part.
What? He's upset that he got dumped and he's like looking, he's trying to.
But what if it's just like the Randall character if he had a girlfriend?
Randall's
like,
not.
In the script. Like even I'm saying, Randall's if you read that script, if you're like, well, this is the same character as in the first movie.
But Randall doesn't have a motivation. Like job. In the whole movie.
He's got a job. Yeah. He's employed.
But he doesn't care about the job. He cares about it only in the sense that he can pick on people. I don't see Randall as the kind of character who has any exterior friends outside of Dante. But Brody, as we see, has other friends. He knows the people at the mall. He knows the people who come to the mall. And they tolerate him. No one seems to tolerate Randall.
Yeah, I agree with that. Randall's way more of a dick. And
I'm just sort of playing like a devil's advocate. I love both characters.
Yeah. Dan, I think the greater truth you're sort of like poking at is the idea that if you really look at Mallrats, it almost feels like, okay, like Clerks was this independent movie. It, like, people saw it. It was a hit at Sundance. But now it's like, okay, now this is a real movie. You got it with Universal. And they really, it's kind of the same idea. I mean, definitely different in the way we've talked about it. It's like more mainstream and toned down. But it is sort of like you just kind of take the idea of Clerks and do it in a different setting.
I don't know. Brody's not serving anyone. I think that's what makes him seem like less of a dick to me, especially is that, yeah, he's snarky, but he seems to be cool with receding into his own little universe, and he would prefer it that way.
Well, he's a little more self-deprecating, I think.
Yeah,
a little bit. Self-aware. Like, I noticed, like, I can't even recall a moment where Randall would, like, take a shot at himself.
Clerks, too.
Well, and yeah, in Clerks, like Clerks yeah. 1 Randall, I don't see him taking a knock at himself. But Jason Lee in Mallrats, he's saying stuff like, oh, yeah, you know, you have to beg for sex, and I know because we can smell our own.
Totally,
like,
totally.
He's sort of a little more charming.
He's smoother. He's a smoother character.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're all sort of aspects of Kevin Smith's personality.
Yeah, that's right? True. But I'm trying to think of like other filmmakers, if they make one film that sort of like puts them on the map, and then they make another movie, and it's like, here's like the same characters again.
Well, if you think the first thing that popped in my head is like El Mariachi and like Desperado. Well, I mean, that's the same shit.
But that's like literally like, let's remake this movie with a budget.
Edgar Wright, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz.
But no, that character's totally different. Yeah. The policeman, yeah.
Yeah, no, totally the character's different. But it is, you take the same two leads.
Sort of a formula.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, that you sort of play to your strengths and kind of like do the same thing.
I think it's interesting
again.
That you feel that there's a potential for them to be considered the same on paper. Because I actually...
If you read the script, though, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, you take away the movies. Like, let's just say you didn't know anything about Kevin Smith, you didn't know anything, and you read the movie and you take the names out. Are those two different characters, or is that the same guy just in another movie? Like, I don't think it's a long list.
I feel like you could make that, like, if you take away the performance and you just look at a script and that's the argument you're making,
that's true.
You can make that argument with a lot of fucking.
That's
movies.
True.
Like, you could go from Reservoir Dogs to Pulp Fiction and be like, what's fucking different?
This is like, not like some sort of thing of like, he's a hack. Like, I'm not trying to say that. I'm just trying to bring out like, what is the difference if there is any, you know?
Well, I think the differences between Clerks and Mallrats, we've sort of already talked about, just that it's more mainstream. I mean, certainly it's not family friendly, but it's certainly a little more toned down than Clerks, and a little more of like a kind of 80s zany comedy. All that like, what was it, Michael Rooker stuff, like him, the big villainous father. Yeah. And,
well, you say it was supposed to be like Porky's or something?
Yeah, Porky's.
Yeah, Alexa said that.
There's a documentary that comes with a DVD, whatever, and they talk about how it's supposed to be a smart Porky's, and they enunciate that over and over and over and over again, and that apparently they added the boobs into the movie because to porkify it up and make it better
just
for teen boys.
Shot.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Joy Lord and
yeah, like Porky's had like a peephole and you
oh,
look
Porky's
into
was
a
some
shower
shit.
And you see Bush and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
wait
I
a second.
We watched
one,
that a
you're
lot.
Saying one boob shot? What about the fortune teller?
No, that's true.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point. But it's weird. Like, that scene almost because it's not a sexy, like, I'm looking at a hot
chick.
She's
an older lady.
It is a bit, but it almost comes this really dumb kind of gag. But I think it's interesting that if Mallrats is an attempt at that 80s. Sort of, I guess, like, to me, it's like American Pie almost did it way better than Mallrats did. If you're going to do a objectifying women, like, romp, just seeing Joey Lauren Adams' breast for 2 seconds and some, like, weird third nippled woman. Like, that's not getting the job done if that's what you're going for.
But I do,
like,
think that people consider Mallrats a failure in the terms that it laid out for itself, which it is, but it's still a success to us as a Kevin Smith movie.
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah, totally. Definitely.
But it is a failure as a right. as a Porky's knockoff. It's a total failure.
But I feel like it's unfair for them to say, like, this is our generation's Porky, because it's like, that's not what
they
made.
Well, the people
like,
who say that are the people are the Suits, and those guys, they're the ones who were sort of trying to push Kevin Smith from making a movie where guys stand against a wall and talk about their dicks to a
right,
mainstream movie that
it's,
you can sell to teenagers.
It's just like anything where it's like you do something original like Clerks and then it's like, well, okay, well, how can we make money for this? Like,
making it less original.
Yeah, we can't make money with 37 dicks, so let's, like, you know, turn it back a little bit, make it a little
differ.
Bit like more like something that we're used to seeing, not like the black and white, whatever. Just let's make it more like an old movie.
Well, I think that's a really kind of good transition into the next movie, which is Chasing Amy.
Back to form.
Which, yeah, like, you can actually kind of tell, like, we're talking about sort of the shortcomings of Mallrats and the problem in the studio kind of spinning in a different direction. You can clearly tell that he set out to make Chasing Amy to sort of, like, wash himself of all that
and
make, like, what he wanted to make.
The movie kicked ass.
That movie's great.
It is unbelievable.
It's
great. So good.
When we talked about Ben Affleck, part of the reason why I think that I do like him as much as I do is that's one of the first Ben Affleck experiences I had, and that's him at his best.
Oh, I would honestly I've seen Ben Affleck a lot of movies. I'd go so far as to say Chasing Amy is him at the top of his game. Like, that's the best he's ever
what
been
even competes?
In a movie.
Paycheck.
Oh, woo.
Well, you could throw God, out
just,
something
excuse
like...
Excuse me. Geely.
Oh, give him man. The bull. I'm the Oof. Give him the horn.
I will go in Ben Affleck's corner. I would go so far as to say that, like, that movie's terrible and it has very few things good about it, but I would say as ridiculous as his performance is in that movie, it is, like, working on me in this weird way where I kind of sincerely like
I'm
he's given it
that.
So much effort.
I'm going to watch that. Do you have a copy?
Yeah, like, obviously. In a weird... Daniel, you talk about it sometimes with, like, Martin Lawrence, where it's like...
Don't even compare.
No, but
I'm
not...
That's a comedic genius. Don't...
Yeah, come
but
on.
But I think it's what I'm talking about is, like, the movie shit, but there's something there.
The amount of effort he's giving.
There's something there that it's a little sparkle to it that I don't know. I mean, this is going...
I think it's more like just showing your love for Affleck is, like, you can just tell that he's trying hard.
Right.
Martin
right,
Lawrence is delivering a brilliant performance.
Martin Lawrence
he's
is a fucking succeeding. Genius.
That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah,
and I don't mean to say that Ben Affleck is a comedian on the level.
I love that
Lawrence,
this is like Martin Lawrence is like the paradigm of, like, acting, and all of a sudden everyone's agreeing. But it
right.
is.
But not so not to get too far off topic. But what I think what I'm saying is, like, Ben Affleck in Chasing Amy, like, you say you don't like him as a leading man. I think this is one of the few times where he totally pulls it off as a leading man. Like, I think it works. Like,
no, I think he's very good in the role. And it's just, you know, again, this was made, what, 20 years ago now? If this is the best Ben Affleck's ever done, one that seems sad for Ben Affleck, for me, is like, oh, because he does so many big movies a year. And if this
well,
was
not
the,
anymore.
Well, this was also pre Good Will Hunting, right?
Yeah. This,
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
so.
It's pre Good Will Hunting. But, you know, and so, yeah, he does give a really great performance, but I can't say he's the greatest actor of all time because of one movie he did.
Oh,
really
I
good.
And
I don't think anyone thinks
yeah,
he's the greatest.
I
of all
to be
time.
Fair, I'm sitting here saying
John was.
Ben, no. I'm
no,
singing.
We heard you. We got it on tape. We
yeah, it was 4-1. It was Martin Lawrence for
Martin
us,
Lawrence.
And 1 for you and Ben Affleck.
Like, I'm singing Affleck's praises. Like, don't get me wrong, that dude has delivered some shit. Like,
so,
it's but
I know we didn't watch it, but how come Kevin Smith kind of imbues Ben Affleck in this movie with that, like, Kevin Smith small town charm, and in Jersey Girl he doesn't?
I don't know.
What happened?
Well, that, yeah.
What
to me,
happened?
Honestly, I think that will be, like, we can get to the what happened talk, I think, after this movie in a way, because, yeah, I mean, something did happen to Kevin Smith where, like, I think for a, I don't know how you guys feel this way, but I really feel this way watching this movie today is, like, most of my recent memories of Kevin Smith are not necessarily positive ones, and we'll see Chasing Amy again after so long. It's almost sad to me because you go like you're like, dude, this guy.
Intense.
It's like this guy has the chops.
Oh, I like, could not believe how good Chasing Amy was. Like I had memory, like you said, my most recent memories of Kevin Smith are him kind of losing his mind and doing these weird, like Zach and Miri and Jersey Girl and all these things, and I could. kind of thought to myself that maybe, yeah, and Cop Out. I was like, maybe what I thought about Kevin Smith was never there. And then sitting through Chasing Amy, I was like, this is one of the best independent movies, or kind of independent movies, I've ever seen. Like, a lot of it, like, this movie's very monologue-y. Like, it's yeah. almost like it almost feels like a play, and there's these moments where you're sitting through these long diatribes from characters, and that's so easy to fuck up. Like, there's that's so easy to have, like, all of a sudden lose interest, or it gets corny or anything. But those emotional speeches, like, really get to you. I mean, because, you know, when we watch movies, it's usually just joking and messing around. But we were pretty quiet during most of those sequences.
So. All the real Kevin Smith flourishes that are in every single one of those movies, in Chasing Amy, they're all at their absolute pinnacle. Like, the moment where Kevin Smith steps out as Silent Bob and says something, that's, like, the best Silent Bob-ism. There's, like, all the monologues are really great. All the heart-to-hearts are really great. It's like he's at the top of his game in that. Because he does the same things over and over again, and sometimes they completely fall.
I always said Mallrats was my favorite, but going back and doing the marathon, Chasing Amy is, like, hands down.
Oh, it's, yeah. It's I don't even think it's really much of a debate. Like, it's clearly the best one. Like,
I mean, unless you wanted to try to make an argument for Clerks, to me is the only one you could you could try to make a distinction.
But I think what's great about Chasing Amy, now granted, it sort of has an unfair advantage on Clerks, in my opinion, because the source material is so much more kind of deep and meaningful. But even that aside, I think one of the benefits of it is, like, in Clerks, we were talking about, like, the acting's shit and it's shot like shit, but there's just something about that movie that we like and it's great. And I think a lot of that is just Kevin Smith is a great writer and it's written incredibly well, and that you take that great writing and then now you go to Chasing Amy and the acting talent.
Is the source material deeper in Chasing Amy, or is it just a better movie and it feels deeper?
I mean, I think there is an emotional arc deeper in Chasing Amy that far, not surpasses, but definitely goes a little reaches more personal more than like in Clerks. It's what is it? Okay, Dante has a girlfriend that he kind of likes, and he has an ex-girlfriend he kind of likes, and about as emotional as it gets is he's like, which one do I go with?
The stakes are so much higher for the characters in Chasing Amy. Yeah.
But the stakes are the same. The stakes love, so you just believe it more because Ben Affleck, like, really brings.
But isn't the story behind this movie, like, Kevin Smith went through a real life fucked up, like, romance, and that was the inspiration for the movie? Like, I think it's, like, a really personal movie.
I have no idea.
I feel like is the case.
I read a book called, like, An Askew View or something like that, that was just sort of about Kevin Smith and his movies. And the thing about Chasing Amy, everyone involved with the production always talks about it as, like, it's such a personal movie for him. It's so personal. But I've never, ever gotten, like, the straight story of, like, okay, this is the story of Chasing
Amy.
Maybe
it's just that story that, like, Silent Bob tells.
That's what I have to imagine. Yeah. Like, that feels like Kevin Smith is, like, sitting real there. Story. He's telling that story. Because, like,
it's
that's
not
it.
That crazy a story.
Right.
Yeah. No, you find out the girl you've been sleeping with used to be a slut. Like, that's got to happen to a lot of people. Yeah.
But I feel like that's what makes the movie so great, is, like, the auteur of the film has such an emotional attachment to the subject of the film. And in addition to that, the performances are just so good.
Joey Lorne Adams is really amazing.
Yeah, he clearly picks the, like, cream of the crop of the last couple of movies he's made. He's got Ben Affleck, who I think is great. Jason Lee, amazing. Joey Lorne Adams, as you mentioned, is great. And then, dude, the dude that plays Hooper X is awesome.
Yeah, he's real good.
That shit is – how fucking funny is that shit?
He's like, – yeah. Like, I had totally forgotten about that character, and it was like I was seeing it for the first time. Like, that whole Comic-Con speech and, like, the little kid in the in the music store.
Dude, I love the toilet main talk in Clerks, but, like, the Nubian god Darth Vader talk from Chasing Amy, that is the best Star Wars talk in any of those movies. Yeah.
It's funny how, like, the first 20 minutes of Chasing Amy are, like, so much like Clerks in terms of the conversation.
Right.
But then they sort of, like, that kind of goes away for the rest of it.
Yeah.
Like, they talk about Star Wars and they're talking about Archie. And then, like, yeah, exactly. And then it's like, then that stuff kind of goes away.
I guess that's what John was really getting at, is that after he gets that banter tightened up and all of that, he actually has a purpose for the movie, which is to explore this idea of love and gender politics and all of those things, rather than exploring the idea of being bored at work, which...
Right. That I think, as a viewer, you get really invested in. Like, I rarely, especially with love stories and stuff, like, I rarely sit there and, like, get really into it.
Yeah, it's for girls.
Yeah. And on the surface, the plot of this movie seems kind of crazy. That, I mean, we should talk about, like, the idea of, like,
guy falls in love with lesbian?
Yeah, like turning a lesbian back from the fold.
I mean,
but they pull it off in, I think, a believable way.
But like, then there's this whole element to it where it's like, it's sort of like, I'm not trying to say she's not a lesbian, but the way the movie kind of plays out.
It's such
like,
a dangerous conversation. You know what I'm saying? Have it.
Well, she's clearly bisexual.
Yeah, or, you know,
say
whatever.
The least.
If but I'm just saying, no, if you took somebody who was like, have just been like, you know what, I'm born a lesbian, I've only dated other girls, I'm only attracted to other girls, like, I could see a person like who would see this movie and just be like, what? Like, this
is
not...
Yeah, but there's a lot of women that hate the shit out of Chasing
Amy. Oh,
totally.
I'm sure.
And just be like, you know, what is this...
this is insulting. Because
it's like, packaged, especially the front half, too, and the conversation she's having, like... Like, when they're on the swing and it's like, oh, you want to know more about lesbians? Like, I'm going to be an ambassador to you for all lesbians. And then, like, later in the movie, it's like, oh, well, you know.
They give her the speech about, you know, just wanting to love a human being and gender not being an issue.
I mean, it's
I think...
Covers that base.
I could be wrong about this, but I have a memory of... I think I was watching the commentary in the movie, and Kevin Smith talks about that scene with Joey Lauren Adams where she tells Ben Affleck, she basically lays out, like, this is why I've fucked women, and this is now why I'm fucking you, is like,
yeah,
I sort of didn't want to limit the playing field, I want to make sure I have this memory that it's either like Joey Lauren Adams helped Kevin Smith write that scene, or she like suggested it should be in there.
It's pretty
because
necessary.
It, pretty good idea, right? Because I think that someone was basically like, you need to explain how this is happening, and I feel like it's such a well-written scene, you almost walk out of it being like, yeah, okay, like, I could see how that happens.
I do agree that it helps, but I think the main thing that helps with that idea in general was when you discover that she had, that Ben Affleck was not her first.
Right, like, she's had heterosexual
the idea that she had never been with a guy, and then all of a sudden Affleck shows up, and even though she's played the playing field, like, she still, like, is willing to go there, like, that I kind of buy, but, like... Knowing that she's had a history makes so much more sense.
Well, yeah, it makes the movie make more sense. And I'm not pretending to begin to, like, specify or understand any kind of reaction by anyone's, by, like, a lesbian to that movie. Like,
right.
I couldn't think of the furthest thing that I would have any kind of grasp on, you know.
Yeah, well, there's no way to
I'm not speaking for what I'm saying. I'm just saying I can imagine there is a constituency that would be offended by the movie.
Well, I completely could understand that offense, but what I sort of like about the movie and what the sort of undertone, and it kind of eventually it comes right out in the open, I like how they explore this idea that with kind of almost anybody, sexuality is something that's repressed and could kind of go any which way. Like, in a lot of Kevin Smith's movies, they have this sort of buddy movie. Like, the first three movies are two dudes, best buddies, together. And I think Chasing Amy really explores this area of, like, you know, there is something to friendships, male and male friendships, that you might not, you know, might not be a gay man necessarily, but there is a love and a friendship that sort of goes beyond normal just friends into, like, I guess could be romantic. I mean, I think everyone has a little,
like, how I feel about you.
Yes, how I felt about, actually, guys, this is all a farce. This podcast. I actually just wanted to suggest that we all fuck each other right now.
Oh, is that with the candles and the bottle of wine are over there?
You got me. That's
and probably most of, if any offense is taken to the movie, it's probably just more in the, like, I don't know if it's like a marketing thing, but more of just like the hook of it. You know,
right.
The guy needs to, and the twist is she's a lesbian, but you know what? He turns her. Like, if that's the movie, then that's, you're like, what?
Right. That's, you certainly know? How the trailers and stuff present.
And even the first
he's
half of the
problem.
Movie.
He's got a problem.
And the first
she's
half of the
movie.
But then when you find out more about her character, it's sort of like, oh, okay.
Right.
Also, all movie trailers are dog shit. So
that's true.
It's almost not even fair to
talk
about. But
we were talking about her past a bit. I think we should talk about what I think, like, eat your heart out, Shakespeare, one of the best monologues, like, ever given. The dude on the street who tells, like, the finger cuff story. That shit is amazing.
Who is that guy? Is he just
I think he's, like, Kevin Smith's cousin.
And he's
got to
be a part of the,
like,
Risk universe. Because he did, I mean, they do bring him into Clerks, too, right? For
I think
second.
He's just related to somebody.
Dude, he is hilarious. And they shoot it from, like, for some reason, that's, like, the only time in all of the movies we watch where they put the camera on the ground and shoot up to give
it
that weird,
like,
perspective.
It was totally, like, straight out of Do the Right Thing.
Yeah, it was the, it was the, like, only time he ever
experimented
with that.
Maybe it was just so you could see Quick Stop? Like,
no,
it's almost
no,
like...
no, it's more like... Banky's telling the story where he's like, I ran into this guy, and here's what the conversation
like
was like.
So is that an homage to something? Because so that is so weird feeling.
Yeah, I think Radio Raheem, right?
Yeah, Radio Raheem. Like, the, you know, the people, all the different ethnicities of Bed-Stuy.
Even like rap music, it's like in the background.
Yeah, and it's just like this sort of like street talk, like
and
telling a
some
story.
Some wigger kid like telling about how him and another white kid fucked another white kid.
I know a listen.
I love it too because it's like the worst story. Like, because if you're sitting there and you're like with like you, if you put yourself in Affleck's shoes and you were hearing this about your girlfriend, like that's
horrible.
Like the bad. It's like the worst.
Yeah, for, you know, for anyone that doesn't remember, it's basically the Alyssa Jones got fucked by two different guys from each end. Like,
and they're
she's
like
blowing
the
a
worst
guy.
Two guys, like
yeah.
idiots.
And the dude, yeah, the dude
you know,
is such a skeezy
like, dude that
piece
you
of
know.
Shit.
Like,
yeah.
I think that's such an integral part of it too. It's not just like, oh yeah, she went down on a guy and took it from the other guy and had a big orgy.
Right.
But it's with these two fuck ups who you know, like, and, oh, it's
they're
gotta
just
be the worst.
Like halfway date rapists.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
yeah. Like it's like there couldn't it couldn't have been more like degrading. Yeah.
Well, that is also a feeling that I think a lot of Kevin Smith fans in general have as being like not the coolest kid in high school, and then knowing that the girl who you crush on that will never ever date you fucks the guy that you fucking hate with
oh,
a burning passion, and
totally.
Even if you grow up and get that girl. You know, she still fucked those douchebags back in the day.
It's obviously like Kevin Smith had some experiences that he needed to
sure.
get out right. on paper.
Well, there
or
is
something.
That sort of that history of like if you're as most of us kind of are like a nerdy gentleman, like, you know, you
speak
do
for yourself.
Like you do feel, I think in when you're exploring your sexuality early on, you do feel totally intimidated.
Yeah. By the fucking like, jocks.
Yeah, well, not even that. It's just sort of, it's like, yeah, if you're a nerdy dude that reads comics or you're a fat fuck like Kevin Smith and, like, haven't had that much sex with girls, I imagine it's pretty intimidating to hear that this girl's, like, bang different guys and dude all that.
Yeah, I like that the that Ben Affleck's character actually has this awareness of, like, oh, I know it's not reasonable for me to be this upset about it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think that's a really important aspect of his character.
He's a grown-up.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's just like, oh, I can't believe you did these things. Like, I can't stand to be around you. It's like,
right.
I know this doesn't make sense, but something about it still really bothers
yeah,
me.
He closes his eyes and he sees his girlfriend fucking two
yeah.
losers.
Yeah, it's like.
Well, it's almost like his. Because he's a very mental, like, intelligent character.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and you could tell, like, his politically correct social self is almost outside of himself being like, why is this bothering me so much? It shouldn't. I know she's a girl. She can do what she wants. She's a woman. But then it's like deep in, rooted inside of him is this kind of little boy that's like, oh
no,
like, yeah. I mean, I think we can all kind of relate to that fear. Like, oh my God, like, yeah, like Dan, like you said, if you heard that story, it would just like destroy
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Yeah. It would keep you up at night for sure. There's nothing you can do about it. And the fact that it's in the past only lends more flexibility to the way that you get to imagine it being just even worse than it probably was.
I love that we've gone from talking about like ass palming
to talking
shit.
About how much it hurts
yeah.
to know your girlfriend slept
it's
with somebody.
Well, I think
Richter's.
That's appropriate for the tone of Chasing Amy for the rest of the series.
Yeah, it's a more
like,
serious
it's,
movie.
It's like that movie that really like took Kevin Smith's ideas and his humor and everything that made him really great and took it to an actual adult filmmaking level. You know,
yeah.
like, this is not a, just a work of fiction. It's like, it's obviously coming from a real place.
Even my mom likes Chasing Amy.
Now, before we move on, if we're talking about Chasing Amy, we really need to go into the end of the movie. Or not the last scene, but certainly
yeah.
the big talk
the
scene.
The proposal.
Which, I've seen this movie at least 10 times, and every time, I'm still like, oh my, like, it's, like, shocking. Like, his proposal to... to Banky and
well, my thing
Alyssa.
Is like he seriously didn't vet that with like one other person. Like he didn't like run that idea by
right.
like, one person.
Or like yeah, get Hooper X to the side and be like, I'm
yeah.
thinking about doing this. What do you yeah. think? Like
he'd be like, fuck no.
It all seemed good on paper.
Because I think most people as viewers are literally like, what? Like, what? Like, what are you doing?
Well, I
like,
think that the solution is that he is presented with the end. You know, he's at a dead end. He cannot erase what he knows about Alyssa Jones from his mind, and he can't dump her and feel okay with that. He can't stay with her. He's got literally no good option.
Right. It's like a desperation.
So move. Yeah, so he's just grasping
Hail Mary.
Yeah, it is like the absolute.
But to bring
Hail
his
Mary.
Like, I get if he's gonna go crazy with
so
her.
So sure about it. It's
to bring
crazy
to
thing.
Bring your best friend into the room. Like, I feel like with her, it is at a level where, like, okay, it might, you maybe it's unsalvageable and you're losing that girl forever. But it's so crazily selfish to be like, I feel like his friendship with Banky, like, that's mendable. Like, dudes can make up.
They tried to use the cartoon.
He tried to make up with him.
The cartoon is like an indicator of where their relationship was going, though.
Yeah. But I just feel like, I feel like it's a really selfish move.
Oh, I think it definitely
is. Just bring
is.
Them both in the room. And I think the movie even says as much. I mean, she slaps him in the face and is like, I'm not your whore. And I'm like totally with her. I'm like, yeah, get out of there. Like,
but even if they had agreed to it, like, even though Jason Lee was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And then she, and even if she had said yes, I still think it was an incredibly selfish move. You know, it was like at the beginning of the movie when he like confesses all of his love to her, even though he still at that time thinks and knows she's a lesbian. It's like, she's like, why would you say that to me? It's like, that's your burden. Why are you giving, you putting that burden on me? I think it's the same situation. I think you're both definitely right in saying, like, where does this come from? Like, for this character.
How would you feel about that movie if instead of her being like all pissed off, like she was like, okay, and then that happened.
Oh my God.
Like, what would you, and then that was like the end of the movie. Like, it worked. Like, it worked. Like, no. I'm just saying, like, the tangent universe where like that ending works, and then how do you feel about that movie walking away? You're like,
Well, you're saying if she had agreed to it, it depends on what the aftermath was. If it was happily after.
What if it was happily ever after?
How
would you feel about the movie?
Love it. No, well, I don't know.
In a weird way, that's almost sort of the problem he's presented with. Like, he knows that she's gone to these places that he feels like he's, like, we as an audience really couldn't go there with him because, like, I've never had an orgy. Like, I don't know what it's like. Like, so I think that's his,
it's
like,
just a menage a trois, John. That's not
right. Excuse me. Yes, but
get
but
your sex.
I think that's
straight.
That's his. That's how he arrives at this crazy decision. He's like, if I do something on par with her,
right.
Well, now I'll mentally be on the same field as her.
Well, maybe the element that's unrelatable is like, you understand the disgust about the finger cuffs, but maybe this element that he refers to all the time is like, oh, I feel small compared to her. Like, I'm not as experienced, and like, it actually makes me feel bad in that sense. I don't know if I share that. So when he's like, you know what I mean?
Like, it's almost like, just, I don't want to go there.
Yeah, like, I have no interest in that. Like, my only feeling would be the disgust of it, not the like, oh, and now she made me feel small because she's had so many experiences and I don't really have it. It's like, I don't feel that way.
But
or I wouldn't know.
What do you think, as a writer, Kevin Smith sitting there, he's writing the movie, and he gets to this scene and he's like, this is where I'm going with it. I mean, either he actually literally did this in real life.
That's what I was about to say. That was why
it
was so personal. Yeah. Like, this was his plan.
No way he actually
or,
did that.
Or he knows, as the auteur, like, he knows better and he knows this is not the right path, but I'm going to make him do it anyway.
Do that? Like, what if he did? Like, how far away is that from, like, maybe that's why it's in the movie.
Like, that was
that
his
was his idea. Yeah.
And retrospectively, he's like, that was stupid, and now I'm just going to show my dumbass move to the world. Like,
no, I think that's why he thinks it's like a good ending for his movie.
No. But the
no,
thing,
just kidding.
But the thing is, I think the movie, like, shows us that it's not the right move. Like, yeah. Alyssa clearly shows us, like, that's a mistake.
Right.
At the end of the movie, he's like, sorry, like, my bad.
Right.
Like, clearly it's not. But that would be interesting. Kevin
Maybe
Smith,
the
like,
movie is the comic
that
he
wrote,
like, that Holden writes at the end. It called Chasing Amy and gives it to her. Maybe that's the movie we just watched, and it's like, that really happened.
I mean, that would make
it. I think
a
that's a little too
sense.
Meta. I find it hard to believe that he ever actually did that. I totally am with him on that journey of that script. I think that's a good move for the story, but I don't think that's a real event.
If he never personally did that.
Yeah. I still agree with the choice.
Are you talking specifically about the proposition scene?
Yeah. Forget everything else. Just that scene. Like, if Kevin Smith didn't do that in life, how do you decide to write that scene? Like, how does it come to there?
I think that scene is really easy to write if you came like from the like heteronormative perspective, like with where Ben Affleck suggested a menage a trois with another woman. I think that's like the obvious sort of like most your average lazy writing would be like, oh, well, Affleck will just ask her to have a threesome with some other girl. But the idea that it's with his best friend and now he's like having to like cross this like, oh, like heterosexual, homosexual line. Was like something I think as an audience is what sort of makes that scene sort of at first really like, whoa, where did this come from? You know what I mean?
Right, because we don't think of him as gay.
Yeah, because the
and
whole
then
movie
he just kisses Banky and you're like, whoa.
Yeah,
like,
I think that's where it like really becomes shocking. Not that that's a negative thing, obviously.
Right? That he's willing to have sex with his
exactly.
friend.
Yeah,
I think, and so right. A lot of people watching the movie. If you're watching the movie and you're going, I'm Holden, the whole time it's like, yeah, man, I've been in love with a girl. I've liked a girl and she didn't like me. yeah, man, you're this, totally, this guy rules.
He pours his heart out and kisses her in the rain, and you're like, yeah. Fuck yeah, like,
that's
totally
my guy, that's yeah. my bro. And then he's like, all right, you know what, best friend, I will fuck you
I'm
right now.
I'm sucking your dick.
And you're like, nope. Like,
yeah, you're like, what?
Well, I think the reason why I like Kevin Smith so much, and I like him and his persona more than I even like his movies, is that he is willing to go there with his personal life, and he's willing to expose himself in that way and talk about the absolute nitty-grittiest details of his life and every thought that has crossed his mind. And maybe that's not a decision that he's personally made, but it seems like a decision he might make.
That's what I'm saying, man.
Sexual politics is so fluid.
I'm walking
so
away
interesting.
From this thinking that he tried that.
I think it's a documentary.
I think he tried that move. I think that was his move.
Because that makes sense
like
to
TV
me.
TV aquarium and all? Like, you think that was
well,
the setup?
Well, I feel like
the wine
like,
and the
yeah.
two candles, and yeah. he was like, let's go.
He's just setting the mood, and so, like, this is it. This yeah. is the question.
And that was what happened this with Jeff Anderson. Like, that was their falling out.
Oh, man.
Him and Dante and Jeff Anderson in a room, like, let's do it.
What, three guys?
I'm just kidding. I don't know. Do you think the girl's name was Amy? It has to be, right? Where he's like chasing
Maybe not.
Amy.
No, I don't think it's we would use the
but
real
why,
name.
So why? That's just an alias
but
for like Benny
we,
or something.
I think that Silent Bob is him in that movie, and yeah. that. But that's not how Silent Bob approached the problem. Silent Bob just walked off.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, that's a good point. It's probably that story is more.
Maybe it's a mix of both.
But the thing is, like, so
maybe
wait,
that was like his dumbass friend was like, "You should do this," and then he's
you're
like,
Silent
I'll put
Bob.
It in the movie.
You're Silent Bob in that, and you walk off, and then you spend 5-6 years thinking about every possible way you could have fixed that situation. Yeah. One of those scenarios is really interesting and boundary pushing, and so you write it into your script.
Well, you know, he listens to Silent Bob's story of how he walked away and regretted it, and that was it. He says, well, that didn't work. Well, let me try something. I guess anything would be better.
The most off the wall, like yeah. batshit crazy
that's
idea.
Where he
anything
goes
is better
it.
Than nothing.
He's a wild, horny animal backed into a corner, and he just tries to fuck his way out.
It's pretty funny because me as a viewer, I listen to Silent Bob's story, and I'm like, oh man, you know what? Yeah, that was a mistake. Like, you should forgive her. You're being a fucking heterosexual dumbass.
You
like,
try to fuck
yeah,
your
like,
friend.
Calm down. Love her and just move on with your life. But then he goes fucking apeshit crazy.
Yeah, he doesn't have to take it to that extreme.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like he overthinks the whole thing. Like,
unless Holden is so upset about the Rick Dara story that he really can't come back from it.
I think that we're all ignoring that a lot of that has to do with his relationship with his best friend, too. And that I think that they just don't – that part of the story isn't written as well.
Right. He comes to this realization about Banky that
– Well, it's like the time spent on Joey Lauren Adams and him
huge.
Is significantly more than the time – we know Banky from like the beginning. But by the time it gets seen in the movie and he calls him back in, I'm almost like, oh, yeah, your friend. Like, he was funny and I remember – oh, you're going to fuck him? Like, what? Like, and it, yeah, it's kind
of
strange.
Well, right, because there's plenty of movies that you see where there's, like, sort of jokes about, like, a homophobic character who people think, like, oh, they insinuate that maybe he's secretly gay and that might be why he's homophobic. But it doesn't stick as, like, okay, Banky's homophobic, but I don't think it totally comes across that, like, he is, in fact, a closeted gay man. Like, that's not as developed
like,
as well.
The only hint they give is, like, Hooper X says
like, Hooper X thinks
he has
is.
An off-the-cuff line. It's like, there's more going on there than you know about. And
but
that's,
but
like,
Hooper X says a bunch of shit just to get Banky's goat. Like, you know, he seems to just always want to, like, throw shit out there. Like, it is validated. Like, it's there, but I think Alexei's got a good point where he's like, it's not as, like, fleshed out. And that maybe might hurt the ending a little bit.
You know, we know that they had a long, like, you know, what he said, like 10, 20 years
something like
friendship. They didn't really seem to be that good of friends. They I don't know, like, I never got the feeling watching Chasing Amy that they were really close.
Right.
I don't know, like, I got, the, you know,
they're fighting a lot.
It's almost like friends near the end, though. It's like, if they'd been doing that, their relationship was really only a comic book at that point.
It's the same in Clerks, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like, those two main characters, they don't seem that close, but, you know, deep
they
down,
seem
they
more
really
close
do.
Than
yeah.
Chasing
well,
Amy.
Well, Dante and Randall have moments of liking each other that I don't
think
he's
just meaner. He's just a meaner character. Way more mean-spirited.
And they seem to know more stuff about each other. Like, you know, like, when in Clerks when they talk about the girl who died and Randall goes, wasn't she one of the illustrious 12? I mean, like, he knows all 12 women that he slept with because they've discussed it. Banky never, like, you know, he always seems to be his Holden is that he sleeps with girls. That's, like, the only thing that he knows about him. It never seemed like it was an endearing thing.
Right. Like, maybe he's just not supportive of him because he's a closeted gay man who's in love with him, but not comfortable with his homosexuality.
Well, I think
he resents
more to what Alexei's talking about, where it's not as fleshed out.
Yeah, the script is just the weight of the Clerk script is about those two dudes, and the weight in the Chasing Amy script is about.
Yeah, but having watched like Clerks and Mallrats, you can almost project it's three movies in a row with two best buddies.
Yeah.
So you can I kind of go into Chasing Amy, and even though I don't literally like. Banky and Brody, they might as well be the same fucking guy. He sounds exactly the same. He's Jason Lee. He's screaming just like Brody did. Like, it might as well be Brody.
I would say he's a little different.
I mean, he's a little more of an asshole.
Yeah, I would say that Banky and Brody are more different than Randall Brody, yes.
I'm not saying they're literally the same person. But there's a track record of, like, you can almost project the friendships you've seen in the past movies and fill in the blanks that we don't have in this specific movie.
And he relies on that as a writer, and that's a weakness in that script.
Is there anything else about Chasing Amy anybody wanted to talk about?
The only other point I would bring up would be that did Holden, in fact, pay Silent Bob rights for the Chasing Amy story? Because I feel that's important. He pretty much stole that story. Like, it wasn't called Chasing Alyssa. Or, it was called Chasing Amy.
I would imagine.
You can take a story, you can't take characters.
Yeah, I was like,
well, it's likeness because they drew him and look like those guys.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
I mean, the story of the comic book that he drew at the end of Chasing Amy was still the story of Holden and Alyssa,
and she was even named Alyssa. So I think it's the movie that we're watching,
right?
Yeah,
it's as much about Silent Bob's story as the.
We need to get in the
movie that
we're
watching.
Well, the few
this.
Panels we do see, I think they're at the hockey rink.
It's the movie,
and it's clearly
it's just happened.
Well, that's going to do it for part one of the Jay and Silent Bob Cinemarathon. Tune in a couple of weeks for part two, where we go over Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and Clerks 2. Until next time, we'll see you later.